Welcome to the Sufi Reverberations podcast, where each week, God willing, you will be able to hear a poem, a story, a meditation, and a musical interlude that give expression to one Sufi's perspective concerning the mystical dimension of Islam. My name is Anab Whitehouse, and I will be your host. Although I am not a sheikh, nonetheless, I did have the opportunity to spend 16 years in the company of a Sufi saint of the 20th century, and by the grace of God, was able to gain a few insights into the nature of the Sufi mystical path through that association. So, without further delay, let's proceed to the essential contents of this episode. The following floetry selection is called Mysteries. Science answers so many questions, but not. Where did logic come from? Essence lies within. Surfaces obscure vision. Where does the road start? Horizons beckon one to transcend ignorance. Sleep seems inviting. Possibility is a magical prism. Beam's spectrum shines. Opportunity is a maze of subtle paths, choice ways on the heart. Questions filter through stomas of being, shadows reflect no echo. Like Icarus, they seek rarefied heights, flaws haunt imagination. Vampires disguised as friends long for dinner, vultures circle about truths. Using a compass made of lies, a guide cannot even find himself. Love has been misplaced, wisdom is unemployed, and Satan is content. Forgiveness is an egg. Trust, once it flies, may not nest again. Blessings are bestowed on shrugs of indifference. Gratitude feels shame. Life is measured by states and stations of moving mystery. God is. The scent lingers on, in memories and in dreams. Seekers chant a name. This week's short story is Who Goes There? There was a woman who had a great spiritual thirst and who had spent most of her life in search of mystical knowledge. She had traveled all over the world in her quest, visiting holy shrines, ferreting out rare books of esoteric understanding, as well as spending considerable time with a variety of renowned spiritual guides. Without doubt, she was a person of great spiritual capacity. Her mystical knowledge was considerable and constantly growing. She was quite content to continue on as she had, secure in the feeling that she was, after all, constantly learning, developing, and directing all her efforts towards becoming a better person. Everywhere she went, she was always warmly welcomed. For not only was she a devoted student of mysticism, but as well she tried to put into practice as best she could whatever she learned. One day, while visiting with a certain spiritual master in a nearby city, there was another, younger woman, also in attendance, who at one point in the discussion spoke of a mystical practice about which the younger woman had heard of in her own journeys. This younger woman said she had never been able to learn more about the practice than what little she knew, but she had been told this practice was the ultimate key for unlocking the essential secret of the mystical path. The spiritual guide who was present confirmed the woman's story and indicated that indeed there was such a practice, but there was only one place he knew of where the practice was still taught. This place was located in a very distant land, high in the mountains which ran along the northern border of a certain country. The teacher had forgotten the actual name of the location, but he remembered the name when translated into English meant the place where earth and sky meet. The teacher added a few more pieces of information concerning the place, and then the conversation moved on to other topics. From the very first seconds when the older woman heard of the foregoing practice, she was consumed with a desire to journey to this distant land, find the indicated location, and do whatever was necessary to be permitted to learn the secret of secrets. While the others around her continued to speak, she began to make plans for setting off the very next day to the far-off country. The trip took more than a month, although the first part of the journey had been fairly straightforward. When she reached the mountains, the going got somewhat rough and became bogged down at a number of junctures. In addition, she had lost some time pursuing false leads concerning the precise location of her destination. Finally, however, she had acquired the correct information, and from that point on had made constant progress, and eventually she found herself at the doors of a rather medieval-looking castle, complete with moat. She used the large knocker on the door to announce her presence and waited for the door to be opened. After some time had passed and no one came, she tried the knocker again. Again time passed, and there was no response. She was about to use the knocker a third time when a voice from the other side of the door inquired, "Who is there?" The woman, relieved that someone was in the building and that she had not been wasting her time, replied, "My name is Belinda, and I have come to learn from you, if you will permit this." There was silence for a moment, and then the voice said, "Please go away." No further sounds came from within. The woman waited for something further from within, but all remained quiet. The woman stood at the huge doors for some time, considering all manner of possibilities about why she was being refused entrance. Although initially she was depressed about the turn of events, she was a determined individual. She decided that the reason why she had been turned away was because she needed to become a better person and spiritually purify herself more. She resolved to go away and intensify all of her practices and efforts. She would return one day when she felt that perhaps she might be ready to learn about whatever the truth of the matter was on the other side of the castle door. Several years later, after many spiritual struggles had been endured, the woman returned to the great door where she previously had stood. Once again, the woman used the large knocker to inform those within about her presence. As had been the case a number of years before, a voice replied from within, "Who is there?" The woman responded with, "It is me, Belinda. I have been here before, and I am seeking permission to enter and learn from you." The voice from within replied with a simple but emphatic, "Please go away." The woman was somewhat heartbroken. She really had tried very hard to become a better person during the last few years. She had worked extremely diligently to spiritually purify herself, employing everything she knew in order to accomplish, hopefully, what needed to be done in order to gain entrance to this remote castle. But once more she was being turned away in precisely the same manner. Although despondent, the woman was not ready to give up. She would continue on with her program of spiritual purification. In fact, she would redouble all her efforts. For the next 10 years, the woman devoted herself to serving others and to working on eliminating whatever faults she came to realize she had. Night and day, she sacrificed herself with one goal in mind and heart: to have the great doors open to her when she returned and to be given permission to enter. After a decade had passed, the woman returned to the same doors where she had stood on several occasions many years before. She hesitated for a moment and then lifted the knocker and let it fall as its thunderous echo reverberated from within. A voice from within asked, who goes there? The woman said, It is I, Belinda. I am requesting that you grant me permission to enter. The answer came quickly and hardly seemed to be worth the years of struggle which she had endured. Please go away. The woman was not angry with this response, just puzzled. She had tried everything she could think of, and yet the doors had not been opened to her. Maybe she just didn't have what it took to be granted admission. Maybe she hadn't tried hard enough. Maybe there was some defect of character which she was overlooking. Maybe her quest wasn't meant to be realized, and she would just have to accept this. Sadly, the woman retreated from the door. During the next decade, she wandered about the world, still trying to learn and still trying to become a better person. For a time, she almost forgot about the distant location and its protected secret. In her heart, however, there was a yearning to return to that place, and she consoled herself with the idea that, perhaps, one day she would go back one last time. As the woman got older, she knew her traveling days were fast coming to an end. She decided she would make a final pilgrimage to that distant land with its mountains and those doors which hid a spiritual secret. Recently, a certain perspective concerning the whole quest had gradually begun to bubble to the surface of awareness within her. She wasn't sure that this new insight would change matters when at the castle, but it was all there was to offer. Once again, she found herself before the great doors. She went straight to the heavy knocker, lifted it, and let it fall. A voice said, Who is there? The woman answered, Thee. And the response came, Please enter. This edition of Musical Interludes is titled, In This Moment. Approximately a decade or so ago, I asked a next-door neighbor of mine by the name of Al if he would be willing to play Amazing Grace on his bagpipes so that I could record it and play it on a podcast. The young man, who has some cognitive challenges, kindly agreed, And the following is what he played on that occasion. Al, thank you. And if you hear this, you are listening to the Sufi Reverberations podcast. Today's meditative essay is entitled Identity. To go through life and never know who one is, this is a tragedy, both of modern as well as ancient times. Yet most of us would rather hold on to the ignorance and darkness of our egos instead of risk experiencing the temporary psychological and emotional discomfort, which may be necessary to seek and discover the truth about ourselves. In our heart of hearts, even if we might not be willing to admit so to others, many of us realize that one of the primary activities of our egos is to generate misery, difficulty, and heartache, both for ourselves as well as others. Yet we permit ourselves and others to be subjugated to its cruel reign of tyranny again and again and again. In fact, we are such slaves to and in fear of our egos, we are willing to forego all chance of having real, essential purpose, meaning, and identity enter into our lives. We would rather continue to permit ourselves to be crushed beneath the constant cravings and selfishness of our respective false selves. We live in the darkest shadows of a king or queen who rules arbitrarily and consistently uses tactics of manipulation, coercion, terrorism, corruption, seduction, and bribery. We dream of escape or revolution, but we cannot bring ourselves to take the steps to journey towards being our own person. We prefer the binding chains shackling us to the identity of the false self over the efforts required to learn how to use the keys within us to unlock our chains forever. We shy away from our spiritual identities because we believe this would condemn us to some sort of slavery to divinity. Yet we have these worries while we go about busily degrading ourselves as a lackey and a thrall of our false selves. The false self tells us, "Come with me, and you will be free of God." However, the false self never explains how we are to be free of it. At best, the false self is like an air traffic control system. As we leave one sector of our being, the ego will turn us over to the appropriate controller in the next sector. Nonetheless, all of the controllers are part and parcel of the same controlling system of the false self. They merely have different names, titles, and appearances. We never will be permitted to fly without filing a flight plan with and getting approval from the air traffic control system of the ego. The only flight plans which will receive approval are those traveling along the network of habitual routes laid down by the dialectic of passion and anger. To control ourselves or others is in the nature of the ego. Any inclinations we may have to seek out essential identity will always be resisted by the ego. Many aspects of modern and ancient philosophical, religious, psychological, and scientific thinking is and has been directed towards exploring the issue of human identity. Who are we as individuals? Who are we collectively? What does it mean to be a human being? What is entailed by or follows from the human condition? Where did we come from? Where are we going? What is the meaning and purpose, if any, of human existence? There are many conceptual and psychological currents shaping our interpretation of the nature of identity and the sort of role it plays or should play in our lives. Religion, culture, socioeconomic status, family life, education, career, race, ethnicity, age, gender, personal history, sexual orientation, nationality, success, and failure are all thought to have significant contributing roles in the shaping of identity. From the perspective of the Sufi masters, most of the quote-unquote normal ways of addressing the problem of identity often are preoccupied with largely marginal, if not illusory, considerations. More specifically, according to Sufi masters, we were all born with an innate spiritual nature and identity. However, our parents, and by extension our families, communities, schools, countries, and ourselves, often make us into something other than what is indicated by our indigenous spiritual identity. Furthermore, practitioners of the Sufi path maintain all people are equal before God. Part of the meaning of this equality is that from the perspective of divinity, qualities such as race, ethnicity, language, power, gender, status, fame, wealth, education, beauty, and so on, play no role in matters of gaining spiritual proximity, so to speak, to God. The elimination of the foregoing qualities from our spiritual curriculum vitae means those properties have nothing to do with spiritual identity in and of itself. On the other hand, such qualities do constitute a network of tests, trials, challenges, traps, opportunities, and obstacles which must be successfully navigated in order to arrive at the real core of identity, namely, our essential spiritual nature. We can know whom we are ethnically, racially, religiously, educationally, socioeconomically, historically, nationally, sexually, culturally, and politically. Nonetheless, according to Sufi masters, all of this is useless information because in and of itself, such information does not help us to realize ontologically whom we are in any spiritually essential sense. To the extent we get bogged down in these sorts of quote-unquote identity issues, then all of our energies, time, resources, efforts, and focus will be diverted from discovering the real source and nature of our identity. Moreover, entanglements in all of the foregoing sort of traditional quote-unquote identity issues just become venues for getting lost, confused, frustrated, and seduced with respect to what our more fundamental purposes, goals, and needs of life should be. Such preoccupations are not in our best spiritual interests. Furthermore, in light of all of the bloodshed and misery which is generated through conflicts and antagonisms involving these trappings of quote-unquote identity, this kind of identity preoccupation is not in the best spiritual interests of our families, communities, countries, or the world. Each of us has a unique spiritual identity. The nature of that identity may share certain common dimensions with the spiritual identity of others, but at the heart of our spiritual identity, there is a reality which is shared by no other created thing or being. Our individual uniqueness is rooted in the realities of the names and attributes of God. Among other things, the Sufi path is intended, God willing, to guide the individual to the full unfolding of the spiritual capacity which constitutes our uniqueness. If this happens, then we will come to know the truth and reality of whom, what, why, and how we are, God willing. According to the practitioners of the Sufi path, when we come to experience our essential identities, we will come to the realization of certain truths about human beings. Among these truths are the following. 1. All of our attributes are borrowed from or are loaned from the treasure house of divine names and attributes. 2. Our essential identity and nature is hidden as a mystery or secret of God within the divine names and attributes. 3. Until this Sir Ilahi, or mystery of God, is unveiled, we cannot know our true selves, and therefore we will not know real freedom. 4. The purpose and meaning of our lives only will be known by us with the full unfolding of our essential identity. 5. We will be incapable of properly fulfilling our duties and responsibilities as God's vicegerent with respect to the rest of creation, as long as we do not know in the fullest sense possible who we are essentially. 6. If we do not realize our essential spiritual identities, we will never understand in any direct, transcendental, experiential manner that only God has reality, and that divine attributes, names, actions, and effects are but manifestations made possible by the sole reality of divine essence. And 7. If we do not fully experience our spiritual identities, our understanding concerning the nature of the meaning of servanthood, which is at the core of our true selves, always will be defective. You have been listening to the Sufi Reverberations podcast. I hope you will join me next week for a new episode of this program. May peace be your companion.